You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Yes, hello everyone and a warm welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. A couple of events to bring you this week. Sam Norris here with Dave Tindall on the line to preview the action at the Byron Nelson on the PGA Tour and the Belgian knockout on the European Tour. First things first, Dave, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
Good.
How are you?
Yes, not too bad at all. We've got another unique event to preview. It's a running joke.
You always
between,
get it.
Yeah. It's a running joke between myself and DK that whenever there's an event that's not regulation stroke play, I get stuck with it.
So looking, it means you do your extra research, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. Looking forward to sorting out the exact format of the Belgian knockout a bit later on in the podcast. We'll start with a recap on last week's action, though, Dave. And starting with the Players' Championship, Webb Simpson winning by four shots, carding an 18 under par round last week and collecting a winner's cheque of just shy of $2 million. Didn't have it all its own way on the final day, though, Dave, as the chasing pack began to close in and applied a bit of pressure to his back nine. But despite an over par final round, he held his nerve. He suggested after that win that it's sometimes harder work to be five or six ahead. Is there something in that? Easier to be the chaser rather than the chasee?
Well, I think we'd all settle for having a seven-shot lead.
Yeah.
I think I saw a stat where no one had ever lost a seven-shot lead on the PGA Tour. Final round, so it was in America. I think in the Open, Paul Laurie did it, but that was kind of the Open, 1999. But in America, yeah, it'd never been done. So it's difficult because all you can do is lose it, isn't it? You can just look a fool. You've blown this huge lead, but he did what he had to do. Really, he got through the first few holes, made pars. Tiger made a run at him. That was exciting. A few others sort of got approaching 13, 14 under, but then he just didn't come back to the field. So in the end, it was job well done for Webb Simpson, and good to see him win, because I think when the putter rule changed and he had to switch back to a conventional method of putting, then people thought, oh, that's him done, that's his career over. But he's chipped away at it. He's got used to it again. And if you look on the season stats, he's actually fifth in strokes gained putting. So he's absolutely turned it around. He actually said he enjoys putting now. So what a turnaround. And it shows if you just work hard at your weakness, you can succeed. And yeah, great win for him.
Yeah, massively so. And I suppose ultimately it doesn't matter if you win by seven shots or by one shot. Getting the job done is all that really counts. You mentioned on Tiger there, Dave. Again, we're just seeing flashes here and there of him potentially coming back to something like his best, and there were plenty of positives to take from his performance last week. Ended up finishing 11 under par, seven shots back, but he applied the pressure on Webb Simpson in that last round, and again we're just beginning to see little bits and pieces from Tiger.
Yeah, I don't think it helped when he was playing alongside Mickelson in that ridiculous shirt that Mickelson was wearing the first couple of days. It was a bit of one of those ones you think, oh, what a three ball, Mickelson, Woods, Fowler. And it just never lives up to the hype. They sort of dragged each other down. So I think Tiger, he was almost glad to be away from all that kind of, or him and Phil kind of thing. And there's Ricky as well. So once he got through to the weekend, and he only just did get through to the weekend, it was like the sort of shackles were thrown off and he really got down to it. And yeah, I was watching the third round and it was just like, wow, this is proper vintage Tiger, isn't it? And then he made that run again in round four, and he's going to win soon, isn't he? He's got to, surely.
Yeah, it looks as though he's just on the cusp of stringing together four really good rounds. You mentioned Ricky Fowler there as well, Dave. One of the highlights of the tournament for me was watching him try and locate his ball in a tree. Obviously, you've watched much more golf over the years than I have. Something I've never seen before, and I didn't realise that if you lose your ball in a tree, you have to locate it. So watching Ricky Fowler get the binoculars out raised a chuckle.
Yeah, it happens sort of every so often, every sort of few years, you see someone looking up in a tree and you think, really? There's a famous example of Bernard Langer actually climbing up a tree and chipping out, if you look on YouTube. But I think Ricky's ball was a bit too high.
Yeah,
health and safety these days. It was different in the 80s.
Yeah, indeed. But I did enjoy that. Quick mention on the European Tour as well. Last week, a maiden win on the European Tour for the Swede Joakim Lagergren in the Sicilian Open, winning that one in a playoff. It was never going to be the strongest of events on the European Tour last week. Did you catch much of it?
To be honest, no. I was really focusing on Sawgrass. But yeah, good win for him. He's someone who's shown his talents before, with knocking at the door a bit, as the guy he beat to the title, Mike Lorenzo Vera. He's one who's gone close as well to winning on the European Tour, and he got quite upset, Lorenzo Vera, because he thought what a great chance that was, and he saw him interviewed. But yeah, bit of a theme in Europe at the minute, a lot of first time winners. So it was a good win for Lagergren, and although he was winning for the first time, I think he was kind of in that category of winner waiting to happen.
It's handy as well, I suppose, weeks like that where a lot of the big guns that play on the European Tour are off competing at the Players' Championship. It's an opportunity knocks for a lot of players, but you have to go and take it.
Absolutely, yes. You've got to do that in these sort of events. Because your winning turn doesn't come around that often in golf. You're never going to get that many chances per year. So when you do get one, you've got to cash in, and he did it very well.
On to this week's tournaments then. We'll begin on the PGA Tour with the Byron Nelson, the AT&T Byron Nelson, the big event coming up this week, for which Jordan Spieth is the 9-2 market leader. Obviously this one being played in Texas, so we're desperate to get a win on home soil. Matt Kuchar is 14-1. Sergio Garcia, who's a two-time winner of this event, albeit on the old course, is 16-1. Jimmy Walker, 16-1. 25-1 for Adam Scott and Billy Horschel. I've missed out a few there, actually, as the formatting on the website is just a little bit skewed. Hideki Matsuyama is 20-1. Brandon Grace, 22s, and Mark Leishman. Then we get to the group at 25-1, including Adam Scott, Billy Horschel, and Bo Hostler, 40-1, and bigger prices for the rest of them. A new course for this year's event as we head to the Trinity Forest Golf Club. Bermuda Greens, it's a par of 71, measuring in at 7,380 yards. Despite what the name would suggest, Dave, there's not a tree in sight on the course, despite the fact that it's called the Trinity Forest Golf Club. No trees on the track. Sunburn would be my primary concern this week. There's not going to be much shade for the players, and I imagine it's going to be a bit warm under the collar.
Well, it sounds like you're just sort of being flippant slightly, but it's absolutely true. It's going to be very, very hot, and you think those guys who are used to intense heat might just have a little advantage there. Some of the South Africans or Aussies or those who are just used to that really hot weather that some of the British lads won't be so familiar with. So it is a factor, as you say. Where do you sort of get cover? There isn't any.
Mm. Yeah, so it's a concentration thing as well, I suppose, Dave, when you are playing in extreme heat.
If you're
getting particularly uncomfortable, can perhaps come into the reckoning. Having a new track to contend with this week makes betting a little bit harder, of course. What types of player are you looking for this week on this course?
Yeah, so there are some clues this week. Jordan Spieth is a member at the club.
Okay.
And he seems to be the one whose quotes have been picked out by a lot of people. He said things like it reminds him of Royal Birkdale, where he won the Open Championship, because obviously it's wide open. It's a links field to it. It's not a classic links. It's kind of an inland links. But it's got those elements to it where you're going to get funny bounces. You've got to be creative. So I think Spieth, there'll be people who are thinking, well, he's a member at the club there. He's won on a course that he's comparing it to, the Birkdale. Why not Jordan Spieth at 9-2? But I don't know. If you watched him last week, when he stands over a small putt these days, I'm thinking, I don't think he's going to make this. It's weird. It was his strength, and now it's almost become a bit of an Achilles heel.
We had an absolutely horrendous quadruple bogey last week.
I don't know whether that maybe burned it in my mind that blimey, he just misses these all the time. He was just sort of knocking it back and forth like a sort of toddler on a putting green for a while on the 18th. So it's something he's got to sort out, because there's so much that's good about his game, and he can still knock in these 20-footers more so than most people. But you've got to make the sort of 3 and 4 footers, because they're sort of bread and butter.
Yeah, we're at 9-2 then, taking plenty out of the market. From the sounds of things then, Dave, you're happy to pass him over in this week's event?
I think so, yeah, given that, for all that he's a member there, he's never played it in these sort of tournament conditions. and reading around, he says sometimes he has shot 60, 67, 68 there, but he's also shot high 70s. So just because you're a member at a club, it doesn't mean to say you're the best player that's ever going to be there, even though you are Jordan Spieth. So should like it, but 9-2, I think to take 9-2 on Spieth, I'd want it on a course where he always plays well, and you know that in tournament conditions. So not for me this week.
We are a fifth of the odds placed 1-6 on this event. So plenty of potential interest each way in the field. Let's start us off with some selections then, Dave. Who is on your mind this week?
Well, the one I like, Sam, is a player not too far down the odds, Brandon Grace at 22-1. Again, I'm sort of piecing together the clues this week with the South African. As you mentioned about the heat, he's someone... you know, he's played in lots of really oppressive conditions. They won down at Sun City, which gets very, very hot, back end of last year. Talking about Royal Birkdale, where Spieth won, and compared Trinity Forest 2, well, that was the venue, of course, where Grace shot the 62, which was the best ever 18 in a major. That record had gone on forever and ever. No one could ever beat 63. Well, Grace did it on that course, 62, finished tied 6th. Looking at the sort of topography of the land, wide open spaces, Grace is a two-time winner at Doha, which is the home of the Qatar Masters. So visually, I think it's going to suit him. He kind of can cope with that. Some players like to see fairways. Rory McIlroy said this. He'd always like to see a course framed by trees because it just suits his sight lines. But Grace can sort of see things and play well in these wide open spaces. He's 6th in strokes gained putting this year, so that bodes well. That's just one behind Webb Simpson, who won last week. And although his form isn't amazing, it's not bad. He was 8th at the Valspar in Florida, which on Bermuda greens, which is what we've got this week. Tied 24th at the Masters, which isn't probably his favourite course, so that was a decent effort as well. Made the cut at Sawgrass last week, closed with a 70, not too bad. So I just think if you put him on the right course, he's got a big one in him soon. And you look at some of his other form in Texas, where typically you deal with windy conditions and heat. Last two Texas Opens, 10th and 9th. So all these little things with Grace, you're just thinking, oh, yeah, did well there. The US Open was played at Chambers Bay a few years ago on a brand new course that no one had ever seen. And it was a similar kind of guessing game beforehand. Well, Grace played superbly there, was in it right until the finish. Just went out of bounds on 16 when he was tied for the lead. So again, he can kind of adapt to a new course and its challenges and the quirky, funky bounces. He can sort of cope with that mentally. So I think all these little factors just add up to Brandon Grace being a good bet for me at 22-1.
Okay, that's Brandon Grace at 22 to 1, looking like the headline selection. Were there others that you fancy this week, Dave?
Well, I'm going to channel my inner Mike Grenham and say I'm going to wait until I see a bit of the action, because there's some I like. I like Adam Scott this week. We've got him a little bit shorter, maybe at 20s. I like Ryan Palmer this week. That's not me on a motorbike, by the way, going past it, if you can pick that up.
That would be really impressive, that would.
Yes, off to the course now.
I want you to do this on a motorbike next week.
Yeah, I'll try. Ryan Palmer, who's played the course quite a few times, his caddy knows it well, he's 50s, could go well. But I just think, even though I've read quite a lot about the course and the comments, these are being said, like, we're recording this Tuesday morning, so these are comments from the Dallas News on Monday night, and the course will dry out by Thursday. It will be a different beast on Thursday. So I just think it does make sense to keep some of your staking plan back and just have a look to see what's unfolding, because, you know, it might just be different to what everyone's thinking. We just don't know yet. We are just guessing. So I think, even though, yeah, you might miss some of the fancy prices that are available now, I think it's just quite a wise move just to sort of hold something back.
Okay. Sage advice there on the AT&T Byron Nelson, which is the event on the PGA Tour this week. But Brandon Grace, the headline pick for that one. On to the European Tour event this week. This is the Belgian knockout. The European Tour heading to Belgium for the first time since the turn of the millennium. And the betting sees Jo Slauson as the 22-1 favourite. Thomas Peters is 25-1. He's on hosting duties as well this week. Aaron Rye at 33-1 with the likes of Jordan Smith. Jorge Campillo is there at that price as well. A whole clutch of them, including Thomas Detry as well at 33-1. A bigger price is for the rest of them. 22-1 at the field sort of tells a story about this week's event. It's played at the Rinkvin International just outside Antwerp. Must admit, Dave, I struggled to find many or indeed any real course specifications. I know they had a Challenger Tour event at this track back in 2010. Before we get onto the format, did you have any more luck than I did trying to find out exactly what the measurements are going to be this week?
Well, yeah, the problem we've got is that the venue, Rinkvin, it's got two courses, a north and a south course.
Yeah.
And they're kind of playing a composite course, so they're using nine from each. So I couldn't quite get the overall yardage.
Yeah.
What it does seem to be is a par 71. I think one of the nines has only got one par five and a par three. The other's got two par fives, two par three. So it does work out to a par 71. I mean, it's tree lined, sort of the opposite to the course in America this week.
Yeah.
We know that. There's also a bit of older form from the European Amateur Championship. I had a look, and Lauten was actually fourth when staged it in 2005. So that was a useful nugget. It was actually fourth alongside Rory McIlroy. So that was quite interesting. So that's about the best we have really on the course. But it's a tricky one. Not only is the format a tricky one with, normal for the first 36 and then went to this nine-hole knockout. We've also playing a bit of guessing games about the course. So a tricky week, yes.
Yeah, definitely so. Let's just run through the format then and correct me if I've got this wrong, Dave, which there's a strong chance that I might have. Regulation stroke play for the first 36 holes. Then the final 64 players after the 36 holes will compete in a nine-hole head-to-head knockout. But I gather that the scoring system in that knockout stage is going to remain a stroke play, so all nine holes will be completed every single time. It's not quite going to be a match play format. And again, as you mentioned, the whole north and south two parts of the course, they're not even going to be using the same nine holes when it gets to the head-to-head stage, just to complicate matters further. As mentioned a little bit earlier on, it hosted a Challenger Tour event back in 2010, which by all accounts was described by the winner Lee Slattery as very tight on that occasion. I'm all for variety and a bit of a different format from time to time to mix it up, but betting here looks a bit of a nightmare this week, Dave.
Yeah, maybe we've had too much variety as well of late with the Golf Sixes.
Yeah.
And the Zurich Classic, where it was a pairs event in America. So we're saying it's good. A change is good.
Yes.
But sometimes, golf is quite good over 72 holes. Do we need to keep changing it? But anyway, it is what it is, as they say. It is very difficult to work out not only which holes are going to be playing, but who's going to be playing who, because I don't even know, does the guy in at the top of the leaderboard after 36 play the guy at
64.
The bottom?
I mean that's
one
what,
V64? Yeah, I don't
that's,
know.
That's what you'd assume, wouldn't you? And then 263 and so on and so forth. But again, I haven't found any confirmation
to back
of
it
this.
Up. Yeah. Yeah, it's not at this stage, no.
Yeah.
So it is a tricky event. I think it's one, we're what, 22 the field? So we are, the favourites are bigger than normal, but that's to be expected given the format. But I think all in all, might make a little bit of sense to try and pick out a big price if we can find one.
Yeah, of those market principles you mentioned, Hugh Slauson has obviously got a bit of course form here, which is lacking in the main in the field. Thomas Peters is 25-1. We'll just mention him quickly. He's probably the most talented name in the field. He's on hosting duties this week as well, which doesn't always equal ideal preparation ahead of an event, albeit he's probably the standout name in this field.
Yeah, I mean, this is the guy who was the top scorer, point scorer from either team in the last Ryder Cup. He's had top fives at the Masters. It is a tricky one. I mean, it's a full Peters production. His sister and his brother-in-law are sort of the tournament hosts. They've been planning it for a year and a half, so
right.
He's going to have a lot on his plate. That's all I would think. He'd want to keep everyone happy. He's trying to put Belgium golf on the map because they've not been there for ages. He's got a lot to think about this week. Given how confusing it is anyway, where he's going to be playing and who against, my inkling is to steer away from him, I have to be honest.
Okay. You mentioned trying to unearth one at a bigger price. Who's on your shortlist here?
Well, I'm going to jump down to one. I think we've got him at 125-1. Florian Fritsch. Can you confirm that price?
Let's take a little look down the... 125-1, yeah. Correct.
He's an interesting one because he doesn't fly. He's scared of flying. He won't do it.
Okay.
So when the European Tour sort of goes to China and far-off climbs, he's, for want of a better word, shafted because he's not driving there. Unless he gets a boat and everything else, it's going to take him forever. So he kind of just waits until the tour comes back to mainland Europe.
Okay.
So he doesn't play much of a schedule, but now that it has, so a couple of weeks ago, he was in Spain. Not surprisingly, he missed the cut because he was rusty. Then he played in Sicily last week and did make the cut. Not a great first round, but then three decent rounds after that. So I think he's sort of warmed up now. He can put some petrol in the car, drive to Belgium. That's not too bad. Yep. For a German. And there's just some nice course form. It's a little bit surprising, actually. That event that I said, that European Amateur Championship that I said Joost Louten had finished fourth in, he played well in that as well back in the day, 13th. Also, on his last trip to Belgium, he might have gone there to buy some chocolates on another occasion, but his last time he played a tournament was the Belgian Challenge. He finished runner-up, first round 64, final round 65. So he's got some strong memories of playing well in this part of the world. He can play well, and I think this format does surely level the playing field. If he can just get to the final day, I think it then becomes wide open. He can shoot some low rounds. So I'd rather be on someone who can, you know, maybe he's not got the powers to win this over 72 holes of regular stroke play. But these nine-hole matches, he could just get on a run and do a bit of damage. So I just think now he's warmed up with these few events, got that history in Belgium, he's a big price. It's just a bit of a gamble, to be honest. But I think at 125s, I think he's worth a sort of cheeky half a point each way.
Yeah, I like that. Florian Fritsch then, 125-1 for the event on the European Tour this week. Presume that's your one and only selection here, Dave?
Yes, I'm just going to go with him. Again, it's one I'd probably like to see a bit more understanding of who plays who,
yes,
and the format. Although, to be honest, I don't know. If the winner does play the guy who finishes 64th, I mean, it's almost like you sometimes get that, don't you, in sport, where the team or the person that just sneaks through just feels a bit better about it. And the guy who's finished top thinking, well, I've done all that hard work,
yes,
and I'm back to sort of square one. So it's hard to assess what any advantage would be for finishing high up, to be honest, apart from the knowledge that you're playing quite well.
Yeah, a quarter of the odds, 1, 2, 3, and 4 on this event this week. By the way, I enjoyed your It's a Knockout gags on Twitter yesterday, Dave.
Surely you're too young for those.
I won't remember it when it was in its prime, of course, but I do have faint recollections of it.
Back in the day, it was one of the best things on TV for me, It's a Knockout.
I can't imagine it ever being the best thing on TV. Blimey. Right then, so there's just one pick in the Belgian knockout this week. Before we get on to staking strategies, anyone across the two events that you really don't want to win this week, Dave?
Well, I think if Jordan Spieth goes and wins, I'll go, I'll make that sort of a noise.
Okay.
If he wins. And maybe if Joost Louten, because I've sort of discovered this form. I think someone on Twitter told me as well that Louten finished runner-up in an Alps Tour event there as well.
All right, okay.
Alps Tour is kind of the one below Challenge Tour.
Right, I've never even heard of the Alps Tour.
Yeah, sort of, again, played, as you would imagine, in the Alps,
yes,
region in Europe. So he does seem to like it there. So he's got good current form and good sort of regional form. So it's just, obviously, the format could catch him out. But if he does go on and win, it'd be like, he got away, didn't he?
Yes, indeed. Staking strategies then, Dave. How do you play your picks this week?
Yeah, so Florian Fritsch in the Belgian knockout, just half a point each way at 125. And then in the Byron Nelson, I will go a point and a half each way on Brandon Grace at 22s.
Yes, 22-1. Good stuff. Yeah. Thank you for your thoughts as ever, Dave. And do remember to check out all of the golf betting on the William Hill website. We are a fifth of the odds, place 1-6 on the Byron Nelson this week. And the Belgian knockout, that event is a quarter of the odds, place 1-4. If you're betting each way, you can see all the supporting markets on the William Hill website as well. Dave, thank you very much for that. And enjoy the action this week.
Thanks, Sam.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.